This is Mark Langdon's Bets Club, sponsored by CopyBet.
Hello and warm welcome back to Mark Langdon's Bets Club, brought to you by CopyBet. This is your one-stop shop for football betting insight. It's Jack Reeve and Mark Langdon with you this week to guide you through proceedings, a look back on the Champions League and the fallout from that, a look ahead to an exciting weekend of Premier League and FA Cup action. We'll also be having a glance at the EFL, where it's all hotting up as well. Mark, how's things? It's been a little while since we've spoke.
Yeah, the band are back together. I enjoyed last week's show. Listened to it on the aeroplane back from Rome. James Milton, felt like he should probably just do it full time. Really, he was that good. The only thing I thought it was missing was a little bit of, for want of a better word, banter between you and him. And you maybe haven't got that kind of Sheringham and Shearer style relationship that we built up over the years, Jack.
It was very much just getting down to business, I think, Mark. Milts is a man who I think wants to get in and out, get the job done and move on.
Yes, he is. Yeah, he's probably wanting to get and watch some county cricket. That's his first love. So he's probably whizzing through so he could watch, Surrey battle out for a draw against Warwickshire or whatever.
I can't imagine county cricket grounds are the epicentre for banter, put it that way. It's been a busy week, Mark, already. I've thoroughly enjoyed the Champions League football. I must say, I tuned in on both of the evenings to just remind myself what real football looks like, because I've been too used to the dross that's been served up in the Championship in recent weeks. We'll start probably with Napoli, because you were really excited about the chances of Napoli this season, myself included, and didn't quite go to plan for them.
No, I think it's a sad one, really, if you wanted to watch a really beautiful final. I think Napoli were the team that you wanted in it rather than Inter or Milan, with that Milan derby coming up. But simple fact is that Napoli in that first leg, Anguissa being sent off was, a big handicap for them, obviously, because they couldn't push on in the last 20 minutes or whatever at San Siro to try and get the game back level. And then he was missing from the second leg and they just lacked his inspiration, really. And Ndombele, the replacement, gave away the ball, didn't he, for the first goal. I know there was a lot for Leao still to do, but I just felt with Napoli that they panicked. Probably because they hadn't was it the third time they played Milan in 16 days, something like that. And they'd had two bad results against them. And I don't know if they sort of thought, how are we supposed to score against this team? And they just started like crossing way too many sort of balls into the box from not good areas, too rushed. Probably, because the crowd is the way it is in Naples, just felt sort of pushed on by them. But instead of using that to their advantage, it almost became a slight disadvantage because, like I say, it was a bit too rushed. In terms of Milan, they defended well. Magic Mike Maignan in goal is fantastic keeper. He's got the lot, hasn't he? He's a brilliant penalty saver and saved one in that second leg. But the way he dominates his box, saves he makes, I think he's a top quality keeper. They defended very well. It was organised in midfield, and in Leao, they have got a counter-attacking forward that I think I've described him as like having a Ferrari in the garage during the Euros when Portugal didn't make best use of Leao, and it was a bit stodgy, wasn't it, with Cristiano Ronaldo up front for them. But sorry, it was the World Cup, wasn't it, rather than the Euros. These tournaments are just on top of each other. But you just saw he's not like that every game, but he has got that in him to be absolutely devastating. I don't think they play great football, the Rossoneri. They are a huge name in world football. And from that point of view, it's good to see them back. From a kind of purist point of view, the idea of them in the final against Man City or Real Madrid doesn't massively excite me, because I assume it will be fairly one-sided and not particularly pretty.
Absolutely. The other game on the Tuesday was Chelsea against Real. We'll touch on that shortly. Let's, before that, look at the action that was on Wednesday. We'll start with Manchester City, who progressed into the semis. They had a strong lead going into the second leg. They drew the match. Haaland doing what Haaland does. And everything is pointing towards, Mark, at the moment, this being City's year.
Yeah, well, I mean, Real Madrid might have something to say about that, Jack. And I, you know, we've probably underestimated Real Madrid in the Champions League for about a decade, because they always seem, you never seem to think they're the best team in it, and yet they always seem to be in it at the last. So, yeah, I mean, you know, it's a tricky game against Bayern Munich. Obviously, you know, a difficult tie for City. So the fact that they come through in such dominant fashion, you know, has got to fill them with confidence. I suppose if Bayern would have got the early goal and they had a couple of opportunities to do that, maybe you get a different outcome. But it felt to me like City were, you know, playing within themselves and just making sure that there was nothing stupid to be done. They weren't going to get hit on the counter-attack, and they were just going to see the job out. But, you know, from a Bayern Munich point of view, they'll be looking at that thinking, how on earth can Inter, who they beat, you know, in the group stage, still be in the competition while, you know, we're out? And I mean, you know, Upamecano has had two legs to absolutely forget. And if you make mistakes like he did at the level that they're playing at against Manchester City, you're probably going out. I don't think there was, like, I don't think 4-1 showed a true reflection in terms of the overall aggregate score. And I don't think this is like the end of Bayern Munich. They're still a very strong team. It was just they were up against a better team, but B, you know, they made mistakes and City were relatively error-free.
You mentioned Inter there. They were part of what was probably the most exciting of the games in the Champions League this week, a 3-3 draw against Benfica. The Inter progressed 5-3 on aggregate. And Benfica are out, Mark, but a side that many will have been incredibly impressed with after what they've seen, particularly in this Champions League.
Yeah, I just think with Benfica, that first leg just maybe felt a bit too big for them. And they didn't show their true colours in that in that first leg, which was a real shame. We saw more in terms of that second leg, but it's easy to do that, isn't it? When the tie's over and you're already out, you know, scoring a couple of goals then is absolutely pointless. But you are right to say that, you know, this is a team that's still punched above their weight and done so in a fashion that was eye-catching. I'm sure that Ramos, the striker, is probably going to be in the notebooks as for wealthier European clubs that to, you know, just come and take, like the Enzo Fernandez did. I mean, that might have been the difference for Benfica. Enzo Fernandez, you know, went for over 100 million, didn't he, to Chelsea in January. Big player to take out of that Benfica team. I like their goalkeeper, Vlachodimos, and not just because he's got a great name that sounds like it should be a nightclub. And Antonio Silva, I'll give a shout out to him as well, the centre half. I think he's somebody that will probably end up playing for a wealthier club in Europe before too long. But as far as Inter are concerned, I mean, you know, they're in a semi final, and they've had a really disappointing domestic season. And it's a mishmash of a team, really, when got players like Edin Dzeko still in it, Mkhitaryan, there, you know, Darmian, players that have, to, you know, varying degrees, been successes maybe previously or not at all in the Premier League. You don't expect those players, I would say, to be playing Champions League semi-finals, but they managed to plot a path through at one of the easier draws, it has to be said, doesn't it? Played a couple of Portuguese teams, but they did knock Barcelona out in the group stage. And I don't know, I sort of feel like I'd be edging towards just narrow favouritism for them in my eyes for that semi-final, against Milan. And what an occasion that will be. Might not be a great game in terms of like Real Madrid against Man City, but it'll be two unbelievable occasions at San Siro.
Yeah, really looking forward to it. Let's talk about Chelsea now then. It was another disappointing evening for them. And I think even pre-match, Mark, I know that Real had, you know, won that first leg 2-0. So there was, you know, possibility that they might try and sit on that lead. But I looked at the price before the game, got 6-4 about Real, and just looking at it and going, how are they that price? I mean, you know, we both watched a lot of Chelsea this season. I'm going, I'm not really sure how they're going to lay a glove. In fact, they did, and they probably will be disappointed they didn't score with it. 19 in the evening. I mean, there were opportunities for Chelsea.
Yeah, I mean, you could take it two ways, couldn't you? You'd say, well, the opportunities fell to defensive-minded players, Cucurella and N'Golo Kante, and they would fall to defensive-minded players because Lampard picks a defensive team. It's very easy at the moment to just put the boot into Lampard, and you're one of those, aren't you, Jack? You absolutely are, Frank.
It was an intriguing appointment to get him back in. I don't think he's necessarily done anything wrong in this period. No. I just don't think he's as good as people make out.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I don't think he got much wrong in that second leg against Real Madrid. I understood completely why he went for a more defensive-minded midfield to try to smother Modric and Valverde and Toni Kroos. He didn't want them to get into a rhythm. They didn't get into a rhythm, Real Madrid. And even though they fell to sort of Cucurella and Kante, I still think that one of those chances should have gone in. You potentially got a very different game on your hands if Chelsea score that first goal. Always likely, though, that as they pushed and pushed, that they would get done on the counter-attack. And it's intriguing for me that Real Madrid sort of key man in terms of this second leg was Rodrigo. And if you were to put sort of rank those Real Madrid forwards in terms of dangers, you've got Benzema and Vinicius very high up. And then Rodrigo would be some way down, wouldn't he, in terms of the pecking order there. And that bodes very well for Real Madrid that all of a sudden Rodrigo's playing at a level that makes him a threat to Manchester City in these semi-finals. If Carlo Ancelotti plays him, I still think there'll be a temptation to put an extra midfielder in there to match up against Man City, try to dominate the area and just play Valverde as a sort of nominal right midfielder, which is what they did last season in a lot of big games when they had Casemiro. This time it'll obviously be Tchouaméni, or potentially it could also be Camavinga, but he's doing very well at left back.
There's nothing new being said when I say that, just watching Modric is such a joy. And I don't probably watch him as much as you do, Mark, but whenever I do, I mean, he doesn't seem to age really. What's he, 37 now, and just ran the show once again. Whenever I watch, just so impressive.
He gave the ball away twice in the first half. Oh, it was an absolute disgraceful performance from Modric. You don't expect that, but when I do the Guardian Football Weekly podcast, Max Rushton sort of makes the joke about the Croatians being tired, because that's sort of what he had in his mind from the 2018 World Cup, and sort of still runs with it 5 years later. But it is remarkable how Modric seems to get stronger as sort of games, tournaments and seasons go on. I mean, it's testament to the way that he obviously lives his life, and, I don't think he'd be out in the nightclubs of Madrid, would he, five times a week? He's probably dedicated his life to football. Was lucky enough to see him pull on a Spurs shirt for a couple of years. He had a difficult start. By the end, I think all Spurs fans knew he was absolutely amazing. He's just gone on to have the most wonderful career. And I mean, it's difficult not to love the way he plays football.
How do you see the Champions League panning out then? Obviously, you were sweet on Napoli, so your opinions will have changed slightly. But
I thought you were going to say your opinions don't count. They're crap.
They've always counted. Mark.
How do I see it? There's no point sort of, if you've held a belief for about a decade in trying to oppose Real Madrid in this competition, I'm not going to stop now. I think that Manchester City should have beaten Real Madrid last year. If anything, City are definitely no worse. I'm not sure if Real Madrid are better or worse, but I think if the two teams play at their level, I think Man City will come through that tie. And if they come through the tie, I think they'll beat either of those two Milan clubs in the final. And I would just edge towards Inter in terms of the other semi.
Good stuff. That's the Champions League rounded off. What's better than one match of the day? It's two. That coming up now. Yeah, an exciting weekend. FA Cup semi-finals to get stuck into. Let's start with Manchester City against Sheffield United. This one's Saturday evening. Late afternoon, you pick 4:45 at Wembley, of course. Manchester City, obviously, short price, 2-13. 13-2, draw. 13-1, Sheffield United. Where do we start with this one, Mark?
Well, by saying how many for Manchester City,
you probably. You think it's going to go that way, yeah?
I do. Yeah, it's been a great run, obviously, by Sheffield United to reach the semi-finals. An amazing season for them, assuming that they do end up getting promoted back to the Premier League. So, you know, if you're a Championship team, you get promoted and you reach an FA Cup semi-final, not much more you can do, really, in a campaign. They've just got just such a difficult task, you know, against a Manchester City team that's kind of smelling a treble, aren't they? You know, they'll believe if they beat Real Madrid, that could be that in terms of the Champions League. They're favourites for the FA Cup. They've got the plum semi-final draw, and they're favourites to win the Premier League. They're on a strong winning run. I know they drew against Bayern, but before that, it was a very strong winning run that they were on. And yeah, I do think it will be a case of how many, because if you look at sort of how City have got on against Championship teams this season, I mean, they went to Bristol City and won 3-0 in the FA Cup, and they beat Burnley 6-0. And yeah, Burnley are the best team in the Championship by a fair way. And I mean, some people might say they're one of the sort of best Championship teams that we've seen. And it's always hard, isn't it? The points tally is going to be, around that mark. And, they're not going to get the record, are they now, given that they're just slowing down? I would probably argue it's not a great Championship this season. And they haven't had to be maybe as good as some others. And maybe that's just your mind sort of thinks that the league was better, previously. But it doesn't feel like it's a good Championship season. That being said, you know, Sheffield United beat Tottenham. And I thought they deserved to beat Tottenham with a much changed team. I know Spurs made changes, but so too did Sheffield United. Problem I've got with Sheffield United, really unlucky. They've got two loanees, haven't they, from Manchester City, Doyle and McAtee, not able to play. And particularly McAtee, he scored four in his last six. He's also got an assist in that run. So it's a big shame, not only for Sheffield United, but also the two players in question, because they're missing out on such a big occasion. But I think it's absolutely right for Manchester City to give themselves, you know, as many advantages as they can to get through to the final. And I suppose the one hope Sheffield United have got is that Man City have got Arsenal on Wednesday, and we are going to discuss that game later on in the show.
I was going to speak to you about this, Mark, because Sky Sports were making a big thing of this last night after Manchester City progressed through the Champions League, and you do look at the fixture list for them compared to Arsenal, and it's very congested. And they were saying, well, Arsenal will probably be really glad that it's like this, because, you know, it almost swings it in the favour of Arsenal. And then you look at that Manchester City side and you go, well, you know, their bench is just as good. They've certainly not got a squad kind of depth concern. How do you see that? Will Pep be concerned with the amount of games he's still got to play?
I don't think he will, because, you know, earlier on in the season, I was quite critical of Manchester City and Pep Guardiola and some of the team selections. You remember when he was playing like Rico Lewis in that kind of position that, you say, John Stones or Zinchenko can play, where they're a fullback 1 minute and then they're playing central midfield. And I thought it was really just, it was like, and then he tried Bernardo Silva there, didn't he, as well, in a few games. And I was just like, what are you doing? And he was resting De Bruyne. I think what he's done, I think what Pep Guardiola has done, he's looked at this season as a whole. He's decided the World Cup was going to have a massive influence on it. And he has trained this team to peak for the final few months. And he took a gamble earlier on in the season that they could get through the cup competitions that they were interested in. They could get through them up to a point. And then in terms of the league, again, you know, they maybe wouldn't be 10 points clear, but they would be where they needed to be, and they are. And now everybody looks just fit and hungry and raring to go. I still think they'll drop points in the run-in, and it's not going to be smooth sailing. Winning a treble is a very difficult thing to do. But you're right. You look at that bench: Kyle Walker, Merrick Laporte, Julian Alvarez, Calvin Phillips, Riyad Mahrez, Phil Foden. I mean, if all of those play against Sheffield United, it's still going to be, I think, too difficult a match for Sheffield United to even keep it you know, relatively sort of respectable. It's a very difficult thing, even for like, it was difficult for Bayern Munich, wasn't it, trying to keep track on Manchester City. So I think it'll be obviously even harder for Sheffield United.
Yeah, just a word on Sheffield United before we get your bet for this one. Really impressive, actually, how they've maintained second spot, I think, because if you look back to probably early March, they'd, you know, just beaten your boys Spurs and they were progressing through this competition and Carrick was really starting to get a tune out of Middlesbrough. I think most people would have probably said there's a real chance they get caught, and they've just kept the, you know, the chasing pack at an arm's length. And I think that's really impressive because they haven't got the biggest squad. They've had, you know, probably more fixtures than most teams in and around them. And they've just continued to stride on. So fair play to Sheffield United for that. And more than likely be playing Premier League football next season.
Yeah, Sander Bergen and Dye are two players that will probably feel like they should be playing Premier League anyway, aren't
Absolutely.
They? So
yeah.
It's not like they're a team of, you know, like, I think they fully deserve to go up from the Championship. It's just that they're now playing the best team in the world, aren't they? And that's the difference.
It is. With that being said, what is your best bet for this one?
I mean, I think it's tough. I was just going to go for Man City to win to nil, just because of those two games they had against the Championship teams already. They won both of those, you know, comfortably 6-0 and 3-0. And with Sheffield United not at full strength, just seems to be the obvious call, I think, really.
Let's take a look at the other semi-final. It's Brighton against Manchester United. What a remarkable season Brighton have had so far. This one's Sunday, 4:30. And who would have thought, Mark, that we'd be previewing an FA Cup semi-final between these two and Brighton would be the favourites?
Yeah, I mean, I would even say that down to the you know, the media, inverted commas. I don't really like that, actually, when people just lump the media together as one. But you can imagine on TV and radio and newspapers, if Brighton win, it will be called an upset, won't it, against Manchester United? And it's just not. So no, you wouldn't have guessed it, of course, at the start of the season. Even I do wonder to how much the fact that United have got, obviously, you know, this big game on Thursday in the Europa League, we're speaking before that against Sevilla, not ideal preparation for an FA Cup semi-final. And there are injuries there, aren't there, with Varane and Martinez and even down to Rashford as to whether he's fully fit. So it's not a full-strength Man United team. They've got, you know, some, I suppose, disadvantages in terms of the fixture list as well. But it does also just go to show how great Brighton have been. I mean, they absolutely destroyed Chelsea last week. That was one of the biggest sort of 2-1 sort of massacres you're ever going to see. It was just a dominant display to the point where Chelsea were 1-0 up and were still about 5-6 in play to win the game. You know, because it just looked like Brighton were going to just come back at any point. I mean, 26 shots they had at Stamford Bridge, 10 on target, and Chelsea only had two. I mean, like, the idea that Brighton could go to Stamford Bridge and be that superior is ridiculous, really. But it is the way that it is. Brighton are just a very good team. I saw it firsthand at White Hart Lane just before I went on holiday when they outplayed Tottenham and definitely shouldn't have lost the game and probably should have won it. Well coached, played great football. And, you know, I mean, I think they deserve to reach the final. I hope they don't, in many respects, because United are our FA Cup outright selection. But I think if you take that out of the equation, I would love to see Brighton in the final.
I did see a nice analogy in the week of comparing Brighton and Chelsea. Brighton is sort of this Michelin star country kind of restaurant with beautifully locally sourced ingredients, sort of a flavour of international cuisine all put together beautifully. And Chelsea with a salt bay of kind of, you know, expensive, horribly cooked steak.
That's a good analogy. Good problem. Analogy.
As you say, United were the outright pick for the FA Cup. They've gone well so far. But are you changing things up in terms of your approach for this game?
I think in terms of this game, yeah, I think Brighton are the rightful favourites. Just, you know, they're just a very good team. And then you kind of look at it and go, well, like, who's, if it's Lindelof and Maguire at centre half, maybe Shaw comes back, and but just doesn't fill me with confidence, you know, to be without both your centre backs. And the other question I would have is just Rashford. Will Manchester United sort of rush him back? They've got, like I said, we're speaking before this game in Sevilla. Can he play Thursday and Sunday? And if he doesn't play on Thursday, does that even say he's fully fit yet? So, you know, when Rashford's not absolutely on it, you do start to question where the United goals are coming from, don't you? It has to be more from those midfielders, Antony, Bruno Fernandes, Eriksen, etc. But, yeah, I just think that without the two centre-backs, I think Brighton might move United around.
There we go then. That's the FA Cup looked at. Let's take a look at the Premier League.
Bet £10 and get £40 in free bets with CopyBet, a sports book like no other, where you can copy bets from the top tipsters. Head over to copybet.com/promo/free-bet to claim. New customers only. Free bets are available only to UK residents over 18 years old. Terms apply. Please gamble responsibly. BeGambleAware.org.
It starts this week on Friday evening, 8 o'clock, Arsenal taking on Southampton. Really interested to get your thoughts on Arsenal, Mark. It's been an intriguing couple of weeks for those. I'm speaking to James Milton last week, an Arsenal fan, trying to kind of get where he's at with things. And he seemed remarkably calm. And it feels like quite a few Arsenal fans are taking that approach. That was before the West Ham game. That was before they'd thrown away their second two-goal advantage in 2 weeks. The word bottle jobs keeps coming up. And I think that's harsh, isn't it? Because Arsenal's still going at kind of 2 points a game. They can't help but City are just winning every game. And in both the Liverpool and West Ham games, they've put up fairly solid performances.
Yeah, I really hate the kind of bottle job sort of accusations.
Even when it's Arsenal?
Even when it's Arsenal. I'll tell you, probably because, yeah, I remember it being said of Tottenham when they were going for the title when they lost out to Conte's Chelsea. They won about 10 games in a row, then didn't win the 11th. And it was, they choked and bottled it. You're like, you know, really good teams still lose and draw football matches. And the fact that Man City put on 90 odd points and sort of get up to near 100 sometimes, that doesn't mean you're bottling it if you can't sort of sustain that pace. I mean, in isolation, a draw at Anfield, you know, Arsenal would take that. I mean, you know, Man City lost there, for instance. And then against West Ham, that, look, bigger question marks would be about West Ham because it's followed on so quickly from the Liverpool game. It felt like they had it won sort of twice, if you like, because they, you know, if Saka scores the penalty 3-1, I wouldn't have seen West Ham coming back again. But it's still a London derby. It's still not an easy game to just win all of those, you know, from Arsenal's point of view. And yeah, I don't think it's a case of them being bottle jobs. I just don't think their squad, and we reeled off all those names that didn't play for City in Munich. But if you go through that Arsenal bench, it's just not as strong. They just haven't got as much money. They haven't got as much squad depth as what Man City have. And then when players like Saliba are missing, you know, they bring in Rob Holding and he's not as good. And Zinchenko is so important to the way that they dominate midfield, you know, playing in that kind of left back, and then he moves into midfield, and we will have to get a name for that position. I think the amount of, because Trent Alexander-Arnold was playing it as well, wasn't he? We haven't really got one for it yet. But yeah, you know, Kieran Tierney, a good player, but he doesn't do that, does he? That's not what he does. You know, if they're looking to chuck on an extra forward, they haven't got Julian Alvarez to bring on. They've got Eddie Nketiah, and he's done really well this season. But, you know, that's the difference. And so for Arsenal to still be in the conversation, look, they were 50-1 at the start of the season, and they're still bang in there with a decent chance. And, you know, I probably won't be allowed at White Hart Lane if I keep talking so positively about Arsenal. But I mean, you know, I'm just looking at it for actually that might be an advantage, how rubbish that's been. But you know, just looking at it objectively, I find the criticism of Arsenal way too much. You know, they're still banging this title race for sure.
So we'll give them get out of jail free cards for dropping points against Liverpool and West Ham. If they were to drop points against Southampton on Friday night, I think there'd be more reason for concern.
Yeah. No, that would be fair. Interesting stat from my colleague Kevin Pauline, who said that when a season is over, the team that finished top as 100% record at home to the team that finished bottom. So in Premier League era, you know, however many years that's been, every time the eventual champions have played at home to the team that eventually finishes last, 100% home record. So if you do think that Arsenal are going to win the league, then you can put this one down as an absolute home banker. I would just say, look, 9 of Arsenal's last 12 have been over 3.5 goals. I think Arsenal to win, if you want to play it safe, you could go Arsenal and over 2.5. But I mean, I'm going to be a little bit more adventurous and go for Arsenal and over 3.5 goals here. Southampton need wins, so they've got to go for it themselves.
You're not drinking. You really have heard a Tottenham fan speak so highly of Arsenal. Let's move on to the Saturday early kickoff. It's Fulham against Leeds. I watched the Leeds game against Liverpool in the week, Mark, and I just couldn't believe how open and poor they were defensively. I mean, if they want to survive in the Premier League, that needs to be tidied up and quickly.
Yeah, but Jack, I've been telling you this for weeks. The Bex Club listeners will be fully aware that Leeds haven't tightened up under Javi Gracia, despite...
Well, will it happen?
No, I don't think it will. I think both teams are scoring the better. If you have a look at the Leeds XG against since the start of March, 2.7, 3, the 0.8 was against Nottingham Forest. So barely counts. 3.8, you know, given how bad Forest are away from home. Yeah, so 3.8, 2.7, 2.7, 1.5. I mean, they just don't really look like keeping clean sheets. But they have got a threat going forward. And this is a game where they... Yeah, I think we'll realistically see as an opportunity to get points. Fulham sort of woke themselves up last week, beat Everton. They had 7 shots on target themselves, which was impressive. They did concede 7 shots on target as well. So I wouldn't say they've got the flip-flops on, but they might just start sort of be packing their suitcases and thinking about whether it's Ibiza or Dubai or Vegas for the summer holidays. And I'm not saying that they're giving up, but I just think that they're playing with a more freedom maybe than they were earlier on in the campaign.
Okay, let's take a look at the 3 o'clock action. We'll start with Brentford against Villa. Was it this season, Mark, where I don't think you said it, but I certainly said it, are Villa in with a chance of being sort of brought into a relegation fight? I'm pretty sure I muttered those
words. I don't
want
to own up to that one. What I was saying was that Steven Gerrard, pound for pound, was managing the worst of any manager in the Premier League. And I think Unai Emery's really shown him up, hasn't he?
The turnaround is remarkable. They're now just 3 points behind Spurs. They're in 6th. They're above Brighton. I know they've played a couple more games than them. But 2 teams going up against each other here have had brilliant campaigns.
Yeah, and I just think Aston Villa draw no bets the way to go. 7 wins and a draw in the last 8. It's been a fair run of fixtures for them, but the way that they smashed Newcastle last week, I mean, that was a difficult game, and they did it well. Just wonder about Brentford. 2 points from the last 5 games. It's still been a good season, whatever happens for them. But yeah, Aston Villa look like they've got that sort of smell of Europe in their nostrils, even if it was like Conference League. I think they'd fancy that. And so they're just looking for European football. So that's maybe not factored into the prices, that there's probably more riding on this game for Villa at the moment.
Palace against Everton. Palace, free-flowing football, goals galore, winning games. This is the Roy Hodgson way, Mark.
It's the Roy of the Hodgson stuff, isn't it? Rather than Roy of the Rovers.
How long have you...
About two seconds. I just thought of it. I don't have to keep going for favourites here, but I thought Crystal Palace were a fair enough price. Everton conceded at least twice in 9 of their last 10 away games, even with Daishi in charge. Hasn't really tightened up at the back. I mentioned earlier, didn't I, how many shots on target they allowed against Fulham last week. And I mean, Crystal Palace just doing it well under Roy Hodgson, and no reason to suspect that they'll suddenly stop now, I don't think.
Roy Hodgson doing well at Palace. We've got Warnock doing well at Huddersfield. Yeah. We had a few wins with Mick McCarthy at Blackpool. Hey, no need for the likes of Pep and Klopp.
Yeah. We still haven't mentioned Christian Cellini, and if we can get by without mentioning that, would be good. So is it Leicester v Wolves, isn't it, next, Jack? And I'm getting 2 teams that are... I suppose from Wolves' point of view, I think they've done enough now, or certainly very close. Leicester. I mean, what do you think of Dean Smith in charge at Leicester? I haven't asked you about that.
It felt much like when he was appointed at Norwich City to try and keep them up. It felt like it was more of a, okay, he's available, let's make a move, rather than a first choice. I mean, I guess with Smith, you've got Shakespeare as well, haven't you? Who's, of course, got history with Leicester. So that was probably part of the appointment. But we've said all season, Mark, like, it feels like Leicester are too good. It feels like Leicester are too good to go down. And now we're looking at things and they're in a really sticky situation. I mean, 2 points from safety. I know there's still a fair few games to play, but Smith's got a job on his hands here.
He has. I don't fancy them to win the game, but maybe a point would be the start of a building block. So I'm going to go for a draw here. I mean, difficult to fancy Leicester. 9 defeats and a draw in the last 10. There were some positive signs in that second half at Man City, but I did say this earlier when with Benfica, a lot easier to play when the game's over, really, rather than starting the way that they finished. A point would be a decent result, I think, for Wolves. And while I was sort of looking, I was trying to get with Wolves, and I was saying, well, they did lose to Leeds and they drew at Forest recently. So they're not really a winning machine, are they? And they're jostling for favouritism at the King Power. And I couldn't be sure on either team, so I went for the draw.
Okay, Liverpool Forest up next. Liverpool, I know Leeds' defence was very poor, but Salah on the score sheet, Jota on the score sheet, Nunez, Gakpo, that forward line starting to see signs of it clicking. They face a Forest side this weekend. Can they continue that winning? I was about to say winning run. Put another.
Yeah, there's a positive vibe getting around the place, isn't there? At the moment, second half performance against Arsenal, you know, thrashing Leeds. 7 of their last 8 league wins have been by at least 2 goals, Liverpool. So I think when they get in the groove, that's when they're difficult to stop. And I don't see Nottingham Forest stopping them. They've lost to the top 6, to every team in the top 6, or all away by at least 2 goals. Now, I know Liverpool are, you know, not the Liverpool of last season, but still think they're one of the, if you're looking at it objectively, you'd say they're one of the best 6 teams in the league still. So I'm still judging them as like a top 6 team. It's a short price, Liverpool to win by 2 or more goals, but it's probably the only way I could sort of try to get any kind of juice in a price that, obviously Liverpool very short to win this game.
Funny situation at Liverpool, isn't it? I mean, they've won 9-0, 7-0, 7-1, 6-1, and yet find themselves where they are. It's funny how it goes. Let's move on to Sunday's action. Newcastle Spurs. We've got, 40 minutes into the podcast, and you did ask me not to bring Spurs up. We're going to have to speak about them now, Mark. What is going on with your boys?
I'll say it's a disgrace, and then people go, oh, you're just entitled. Look, you're still in the hunt for Champions League.
You've been very patient with Spurs this season.
I have. Yeah, but do you remember when they were higher up in the league table and I was saying to you then that there were Tottenham fans restless with the way that the team were playing. And that's been going on now for a couple of years. I mean, it's just a horrible, toxic place to be at the moment. Fans are rowing with each other over, whether you want sort of Daniel Levy out enough. Davinson Sanchez booed very heavily to the point where, yeah, he had to be taken off in last week's defeat to Bournemouth, and there were fans row. I didn't go to that game, so I went to Brighton, and the atmosphere wasn't a nice place to be. And I knew it would be the same against Bournemouth. And, there were fans sort of rowing with each other over whether you should boo him or not. And, the whole team's an absolute mess. But should you expect any different? I mean, Stiolini, the interim coach, he cannot change anything from what Conte was doing, because he's like Conte's like cone collector, isn't he? I mean, he'll be going back to whatever job Conte gets next. He'll be going to be his number two. He can't suddenly rip it all up, because if it works, he's going to make his mate look terrible. So he just plodded on with the same 11 that have been, you know, just not good enough in terms of the way that they've been playing all season long. And I think here, Newcastle, look, they had a really bad result last week against Aston Villa, but generally speaking, they're playing well. And then you look at Tottenham, last 6 away games, defeats at Leicester, Milan, Sheffield United and Wolves, as well as draws against Southampton, Everton. Now, how can you justify sort of, you know, you know, 2 points in, you know, from those six outcomes? You know, I mean, that's not good enough. And they've been lucky at home. They were outplayed by Brighton, for instance, last week. I actually thought that Newcastle should have been shorter to win this game.
Well, other than that, all good at Spurs. A team that will be enjoying life at the moment, Bournemouth, they host West Ham this weekend. It's been a brilliant few weeks for Bournemouth. A 2-1 win over Fulham, defeat to Brighton, fair enough, beating Leicester, beat Spurs. I mean, what a job Gary O'Neill's done.
Yeah, I mean, he can't win manager of the season if, you know, because if Arsenal win it, then it probably has to go to Arteta. And if City end up with a treble, it's difficult not to give it to Pep Guardiola. But the job he's done, you know, been fantastic. They signed well in January, look a completely different team. Even when they've been losing matches since the new year, they've been very competitive. And I think they'll be competitive here. I think a draw is a nice result for both teams. Gets them 1 point closer to safety. West Ham have got Europa Conference quarterfinal on Thursday. Could take something out of the legs. And they just need a couple more points and then they can give that their full attention. Yeah, wouldn't be surprised there if this is not a mutually beneficial draw yet in that sort of, you know, kind of outcome that, you sometimes see where the two teams knock it around, you know, among the centre-halves or whatever. But I just think if it's a draw with 20 minutes to go, it might be one of those where you don't risk, you know, trying to win for fear of losing.
Yeah, really excited for that one. And I've been really impressed with all of the kind of newly promoted sides in the Premier League this season, giving it a real go. There's a few games next week in the Premier League, both Tuesday and Wednesday. We'll take a look at the big one. It's Manchester City against Arsenal. I mean, this is going to be a must-watch market and it's going to be fascinating to see how it goes.
Yeah, and you know, we'll preview it before knowing what happens, obviously, the weekend. Both very short prices to win their games on Friday and Saturday. So would assume that we would go into it with the same picture. I thought Arsenal plus one on the Asian handicap. So if they lose by one goal, you get your money back, was the way to go here. You know, Man City are not far short of being 1-2 to win this game at the Etihad. I just feel like maybe too many people have already added 3 points onto City's Premier League total. It doesn't mean it'll be as easy a game as that. You know, for all that Arsenal got disappointing results against West Ham and Liverpool, and I think it wants to be an inverted commas, that disappointing result at Anfield, by the way, that they've still scored twice in both of those matches. And if they can sort of get on the score sheet at City, and you feel like they can because, you know, Gabriel Jesus is back and Saka and Martinelli are a big threat. So Odegaard's having a strong season. I don't like backing a team at 1-2 when you think they might need to score 3 goals to win a game of football. So I expect it to be a really exciting game. And I can just see Arsenal being more competitive than maybe the odds suggest, albeit that I would say, you know, if you ask me who's going to win the game, I'd probably say City, yeah.
That's going to be an absolute corker. Can't wait for that one. As we mentioned earlier on in the show, Mark Langdon's Bets Club is now sponsored by CopyBet. Welcome them to the show. And every week we'll be bringing you an enhanced treble that you can find on their website. We'll link it in the description of these podcasts. Mark will be putting up 3 selections. It will be boosted over there. We'll give you the price after the 3. And we'll start with your first.
Yep, so I'm going to go for Lazio to beat Torino. Lazio have won 7 of their last 8 league games and conceded just once in that period in a 2-1 home victory against Juventus. There is a doubt, I think, over Ciro Immobile, who was involved in a car crash at the weekend. Thankfully, everybody's okay, just whether he can play. And having been in a few taxis in Rome last week, I'm not surprised that there was a car crash because it's... it's the scariest roads I've ever been on. I mean,
oh, really?
Quite how. I mean, yeah, they just like make like 4 lanes out of 3 or just like just don't indicate and just go where they want.
Is it one of those places where you sort of have to drive with your horn?
Well, no, because they don't bother with those. They just swerve in and out of traffic at all times. Incredible that there are not more accidents. But even if Immobile is not there, their record with and without in this season is pretty identical. So I think Lazio can beat Torino.
Lazio to beat Torino. What's the second?
Newcastle to beat Spurs. Well, I mean, we spoke about how awful Spurs have been in recent weeks. They're lucky to be anywhere near the Champions League places.
And the third and final section?
Yeah, both teams are scoring. Lyon against Marseille. So both teams have scored in 10 of Lyon's last 13 matches. And Marseille have scored in 15 of their 18 away games in all competitions this season. You know, they'll have to play on the front foot again as they push for Champions League. So if you're watching the game on Sunday night, if you're not sure which European game to watch, that might be the one.
Okay, so we've got Lazio to beat Torino, Newcastle to beat Spurs, both teams to score in Lyon against Marseille. That's coming out at 15-4, boosted by CopyBet. You can find out more about them in the description below. Always a joy to welcome EFL guru Dan Childs to the show. It's getting to that point of the season where every game has something riding on it. Three selections for Dan this week. Where are we kicking things off?
Yeah, we'll start off with, I've got two selections in League Two. I'll start off with mid-table clash, Tranmere at home to Grimsby. I mean, you could say neither team have got, a great deal to play for, but I fancy Grimsby, the away side here, around 9-5, I think they're good value to get the win. I mean, you think of Grimsby, I mean, the highlight of their season was the FA Cup run, and their league form, after they were knocked out, that 5-0 defeat at Brighton in the quarterfinals, their league form did sort of, tail off, understandably, after that. They had no winning five, but they have got it back together recently, Grimsby. 7 points from the last three games. 1-0 win at home to Barrow on Tuesday. That actually took them into the top half for the first time since October. So they're actually finishing the season quite well. Been a good season, really, for Paul Hurst's side, considering they come up through the playoffs from the National League last season. It's always never easy to adjust. They've done that very well. You know, the cup runners I've mentioned as well. And I think their season, although they're only 1 point above Tranmere, they'll be a lot happier with how things have gone. Tranmere would have been looking to push for the playoffs. Had a disappointing season. Mickey Mellon was sacked last month. Ian Dawes, his assistant, has stepped up. But results haven't really improved. They've had 1 win in 9, Tranmere. Got lots and lots of injuries as well and a small squad. So the latest disappointment they had on Tuesday, they went 2-0 in front away to Rochdale and were pegged back to a 2-2 draw. So it's a poor season for Tranmere. And I think they could be in for more disappointment against Grimsby.
Just as I said, Dan, that every game has something riding on it. You find probably the only game in the whole of the EFL without something riding on it. Let's hope that your second selection is an exciting one.
The second one's a little bit more exciting. Colchester at home to Sutton in League Two. Colchester do still need a win to make sure of safety. So, there'll be plenty they feel riding on the game for them. Sutton are another one of those sides. Not going to go up, not going to go down. But I think Colchester here, I think they're a good bet around 11-8 to win this game. And they've improved under Ben Garner, who likes his teams to sort of play, good passing football. Unbeaten in the last 7 games, 7 points from the last 3 games. I mean, that could have been all 9, really. They were dominant in a 0-0 draw away to Crawley on Tuesday. I mean, that was a chance for them to sort of get over the line, if you like, if they'd have won that. But they haven't quite done that yet. And that makes them a tough opponent, I think, this weekend. Sutton, they're the ideal team you want to play at this stage, really. They've fallen out of playoff contention. They've had no winning in eight. Got a few injuries, sort of like they had a lot of injuries earlier in the season. They got a few cropping up again. Captain Craig Eastman is out for this one. He's a big miss for them. So they look ideal opponents for Colchester, and I fancy Colchester to get the win they need to for safety.
Another convincing argument. Time for your third and final.
Yeah, third and final is a League One game. Again, there's a bit riding this for one of the two teams. Port Vale are home to Bristol Rovers, but I'm actually going to go for the mid-table team here, Bristol Rovers, to get the result. They're around 11-8 on the draw no bet. I just think sometimes need to win factors can influence certain fixtures a little bit too much. Joey Barton, he's never going to stand for a subpar performance, and Bristol Rovers have won their last 3 away games. They played pretty well as well on Tuesday. Lost 2-1 at home to Sheffield Wednesday, but by all accounts, it was a very even game. They gave Sheffield Wednesday a tough time in that game. So it's certainly not a side that you would say are anywhere near being on the beach at the moment. And Port Vale, they put up actually a good show. They sacked Darrell Clark earlier in the week, and Andy Crosby took over, and they performed quite well at Ipswich on on Tuesday. Look, took the lead and ended up losing the game 2-1. But they have been on a really poor run, Port Vale. No winning eight. They're 6 points above the drop zone. They should probably be all right, but they're still going to feel that they might need maybe one more result just to be secure. I don't think they'll get it here. I think Bristol Rovers, as I said, on decent form on their travels, could get the win.
So just repeat your three for this week, Dad.
Yep, three for this week are Grimsby to win away to Tranmere, Colchester to win at home to Sutton, and Bristol Rovers on the draw, no bet, away to Port Vale.
Great stuff. Thanks as always, Dan.
You're welcome.
Yeah, really excited to see how the EFL matures this weekend. So much going on there. Great to hear from Dan Charles, as always. You can find out more from him on the Racing Post Sport website. Mark, we'll finish things off this weekend with some of your other best bets. I've always been intrigued with where you're going in your prop shop picks. We'll start with that.
Yeah, they've been on a fantastic run. Hopefully, Eze can continue that for Crystal Palace by having a shot on target against Everton, who conceded 7 shots on target against Fulham last week. In Roy Hodgson's 3 games in charge of Palace on his second stint, Eze's had 9 shots in those 3 games. 6 of them were on target. And yeah, I see no reason to think that, you know, Roy Hodgson is going to... He's developed into Kevin Keegan, hasn't he? He used to be George Graham. Now he's Kevin Keegan. And Eze can lead the Palace charge.
Yeah, we'll certainly be on that one. How about a long shot?
So it's in the Arsenal v Southampton game. You could make a joke about Southampton being competitive and maybe scoring a goal or something like that. But for a long shot, I'm going to go for Gabriel each way, first goal scorer. Arsenal have scored 12 goals from set pieces this season. Saints have conceded 12. And in terms of like where that puts them, right at the top and bottom of the respective stats in terms of scoring and conceding from set pieces. So this could be a mismatch. Gabriel, he's got 3 goals this season. Always looks a threat when Arsenal deliver those corners and free kicks into the box. He got 5 last term. So he might still have something left for this campaign in terms of getting another goal.
And if you was to have one bet this week, what would it be?
Yes, a Newcastle to beat Tottenham on Sunday. In terms of XG and expected points and all those type of things, Newcastle are comfortably better than Tottenham. And if you have a look at it, they were on a 5-game winning streak before being brought down to earth by Villa. That includes a very impressive win over Manchester United. If you can forgive them one bad performance against Newcastle, I think that their price is more than fair to beat Tottenham.
There we go. There is another episode of Mark Langdon's Bets Club rounded up. What have you got to look forward to for the rest of the week?
There's not much going on. I'm working for Stan Sport in Australia on the Europa League and Europa Conference tonight. And then a very quiet weekend, actually. I don't think there's anything in the Langdon planner, which is how I like it, to be honest. I've got to mow the lawn.
How many mows have you had so far?
Well, about 0.6. Because the lawnmower broke during the... I think it just got too long for the Flymo. And it appears to have broken. So I've got like a Mohican in the garden at the moment. It's at least clear in the bit where you walk to the shed. But there's one patch of it that probably would be, you know, long enough for the crazy gang to enjoy playing football on it. Some of it a bit more like our Barcelona would like to play. So that's probably what I've got on this weekend, trying to get that sorted out.
You could just go, just don't do it and say that it's rewilding. That's quite a popular way.
Oh, is that what you say in the country? Is it in you country bumpkins?
Well, it seems just a popular way of being lazy and not cutting it. You're just saying you're being good to nature and you're rewilding.
Okay. I'm sure the wife will be fully on board with that. I mean, she'll have me by the throat if I suggest that.
There we go. Whatever you're up to this weekend, I hope you enjoy. Mark and Dan have put up plenty of selections in this week's episode. Please don't feel the need to back them all. Only ever gamble with money that you can afford to lose. A big thank you to CopyBet for sponsoring Bets Club. You can find out more from them in the description. The boosted treble is able to be found below too. We'll be back next week for another episode. Thanks very much for listening. See you later. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mark Langdon's Bets Club, sponsored by CopyBet.